expand your imagination, because that's what it's all about. It's 15 minutes away from 10 o'clock, and you're listening to Art and Soul on Monday morning, and I'm Sylvie, and as I said, we've got Jay. Jay is in the studios as we speak, and Jay Kutchell, welcome. Welcome to 2XX.
Thanks, Sylvie. Thanks for the opportunity to come in and have a chat to
you. Look, I just was so extraordinarily excited and blown out when I walked into the Canberra Contemporary Art Space in Manuka and saw your installation. And I've already kind of explained to people listening just, you know, a little bit about the concept or the materials that we use, and which I'll get you to do in sort of more detail, of course. And the thing is that these incredible pieces still, they have this sort of raw element of the recycled materials, etc., but they have this incredible shape and this obvious skill and attention to detail that's been included. And it's a real mix, actually, of electronics and
speakers and sound and interactivity. So, yeah, it's been a long journey. It's been a great learning curve for me. And I don't know where to start, you know. 3.5 months ago I was there jumping around in a recycling bin, pulling out cardboard boxes and, you know, gluing them together. Mm-hmm. And basically from that point on you just start cutting and gluing and gluing. And when you're sitting there peeling tape off cardboard boxes, you're really kind of wondering where your life's at and you're really wondering where it's all going. But, you know, I think the response has been really positive and I've been really, really pleased. So, I mean, basically it just started from a computer model based on, I guess, you know, contemporary design elements of, you know, plane engines or Mac speakers, you know, those Mac little funky little Mac speakers that
That's
are
what it looks
kind of
like.
Spherical.
Okay, the round cylinder shapes of a plane engine.
That's right.
I was trying to explain it to the listeners. But
acorns are probably a good shorthand, visual shorthand for people, you know, hollow acorns. And from that point, you kind of get the computer to print out all these templates for you, so cross-section the work. And so there's actually 40 layers of bricks within the work. And from that point on, you basically just cut out each layer, and you layer it up and cut it out, and it ends up being quite stepped, and you end up carving that at the end of the process. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of help from Jeff Farquhar. I've got a studio assistant. He's not my studio assistant. He's my studio bitch. But
okay, Jeff. Your friend, but, so I take it that you know I won't mediate here.
Yeah, no. I share a studio with Jeff, and
he's a very
we have a great relationship.
Artist.
And he's given me a lot of, you know, 11th hour help. And, you know, with a project like this, you can't possibly plan all the last minute things that happen to you. And because it was a reasonably complicated task to put it all together, there was a lot of people who gave me a lot of help, and I have to thank all of them and really appreciate it. You know, people like Blade Lalamond and Louise Pinder, Rachel Bowick, my lovely partner Sally. So, and Jeff, of course. So
all the people that you've mentioned, we know them all as working with installation sculptural type art.
And, you know, we're all, you know, sculpture graduates. We've been through the School of Art. So, you know, that is a real breeding ground for ongoing relationships between people and in the arts community. And, you know, I think it's a really important environment. You know, it still continues to support artists, you know. And at the beginning of this process, I had an artist graduate in residence with the sculpture department. So, you know, Michael Legrand was kind enough to open his doors to me and let me cut up lots of cardboard. And then, you know, Anka was kind enough to give me a studio out at Mitchell. So, you know, that's, you know, as an emerging artist, that's a fantastic opportunity. And, you know, Jeff and I have looked everywhere in Canberra, and there really is very little opportunity for cheap spaces to make a lot of mess, to make a lot of noise, as sculptors and glassies and woodies like to do. So,
And metal workers, as Rachel Bowick is.
That's right.
She's one of the only female metal workers there is. Can you imagine? Isn't that extraordinary? Well, in Australia, anyway.
Yeah,
probably
no, I think
not
she's
in England.
you know, she's kind of pushed the idea of sculpture and gold and silver to a really fine point, and I think she's doing really well. Mm. Yeah, I actually live with her, so
okay.
I can kind of gain an insight into her as well. But
oh, no, look, I've been a fan for years of Rachel's work. Like, do you remember the huge sort of metal wave-like structures? They, you know, for people who cook and make cakes, and you can get, like, a potato peeler and peel chocolate, and it makes this curl, and you put it on top of the cake. Well, they looked like, especially, they looked so delicate and light, but they were fairly huge and obviously made from metal. And, you know, I've just kind of been a huge fan of Rachel.
I think she put a lot of work into those, and almost acrobatic type forging involved in those. So.
Mm. Well, how do you get a piece like yours into the Canberra Contemporary Art Space in Manuka? I mean, I guess it helps that it's got those doors, but it looks bigger than
the... Yeah, it is. It is. Once you put it together, it is physically bigger than the opening, but it is in two halves, so you can actually take them apart. It still takes four people to move each half, so... Even though they're cardboard, they do weigh a fair bit. And so we kind of shuffle them into the space, and you stack them up in the space and then do a lot of assemblage in the space. So,
how tall are they?
They're about 2 metres high and 2 metres wide and about 1.8
long. Are you sure?
Yeah, yeah. What, do they seem bigger or smaller?
They do. They seem bigger to me.
I think it's that space is...
compresses,
you know, because the ceiling, there's not much ceiling above that.
True. So a bit of an illusion.
You know, in theory, I can put them on their side and fit them through most, maybe wider than average doors, but, you know, they'll get through. So I could probably fit them into squishy spaces. It'd be a bit of a challenge, but...
Well, also because they're three-dimensional, it adds to the ginormous kind of feeling from them. But then inside, I mean, I also enjoyed... looking at the steps of the cardboard that have been compressed or, you know, glued together from the inside, because you really do see the steps on the inside. While you've sort of made a fairly smooth finish on the outside, though you can see the graduated bits between, like, you know, what's in the middle of cardboard, you know, that sort of squiggly bit. But inside, it might be interesting to sort of explain a bit about the technical side of things, because this is actually called, your exhibition is titled Lingoplasty. Lingo referring to words.
Yep.
And plasty.
Plasty is just to join things together, like a nose job is a rhinoplasty. So I guess the idea behind that is that these objects are very large speakers, and from that point they actually are hooked up to a computer system that I have sampled individual words off, you know, radio and TV, and put those together in a computer program. And underlying that is a kind of sentence template that basically allows the computer to randomly select maybe a noun or a verb or an adjective and put those together in a sentence structure. And so linguistically it will actually be correct. It'll be grammatically correct, but it may not make much sense either as well. So it's kind of a language generator as well. And, you know, I guess it's about creating that space of fridge poetry or data poetry where you can actually play with words in a different environment. But I guess in this environment, the only relationship is your experience of them through time rather than actually being able to move words about on a fridge or something like that. So it's just about creating that imaginative space and creating a relationship between words and coming up with new meanings. And
well, I did mention at the beginning of the show that, you know, there's a sensor or a radar, a sensor at the top on the ceiling, sort of in between the two speakers or the two pods or objects or whatever you want to call them, and that as you walk under it, either the sort of dialogue from piece together television shows or nursery rhymes or something that's happening will occur, or a violin. I really quite was taken by the violin. Yep. And the closer you are to standing under the sensor, the louder the violin gets coming from the two halves into the middle part of the gallery.
Yeah.
I mean, apart from sort of graduating from the School of Art in the sculpture department, what other kind of background do you have that enabled you to bring these two together?
Well, I guess, you know, you have to thank people like Dick Smith for, you know, letting kids like me just tinker around with a soldering iron from, you know, age 13 or whatever it was. But I have done a bit of interactive multimedia. That was, I think, a cross-pollination between what was then ACAT and the School of Art, with David McDowell, who's, you know, quite proficient, and also Stuart Bailey later on.
Mm, and it's very interesting because David's known for his video kind of work.
Yeah, I think under David, it was just more general programming under a program called Director, which is basically, yeah. And
so computer enough, programming.
Yeah, so funnily enough, the actual programming language that's used in that software is called Lingo. So there's kind of these nice little recurrences of meaning throughout the process. And, yeah, I think, you know, in my final year when I was doing honours, I actually made some drawing machines out of that Lego Mindstorms, which you can also program. And so they actually were kind of just drawing almost random squiggles and stuff, but that was also using a template system. So I'm kind of, it's almost like a recurring thing for me is this idea of translating the random through a template system. So you've got generative structures and creating meaning or, you know, a visual outcome or an auditory outcome that's a little bit more ordered but still has a random substructure. So
It's very interesting because also we know Blade and her sculptural pieces and Rachel and her sculptural pieces and Lou and hers. But Stuart Bailey, I mean, I'm fascinated because he's pretty well known for his pop art type of presentations, whether it be wood and cardboard mixed in with painting or polystyrofoam, which is what's happening at the moment down at CMAG, or installations of painting on the wall, etc., and his poster type of work when he had a residency at Megalo that really brought that to the fore. But how was Stuart Bailey an influence here?
Well, at the time I was doing, what was interactive multimedia, and he then took over the teaching of that course, and because he was doing a lot of work with web-based media, I think he had he had kind of objects like out of Bunnings catalogues, like or even, you know, stationery catalogues. He had like a photocopier, and you'd click the photocopier and it'd start to disintegrate, and had all these kind of white goods, or there was some kind of mechanised goods, and you'd click on them and they'd all kind of fall to pieces on the screen. And I think his experience there kind of got him a little bit of teaching work. So, and he was doing web-based stuff with us as well.
Oh, brilliant.
So, and that was kind of fun.
Thank you. I mean, I've always known that he's derived a lot of stuff from web-based images, etc., or investigations. It's always much deeper with Stuart than just as simple as that. But I never could have understood where that translated across.
He did do some 2D work after that that was based on that screen-based work as well, where it was just a flat piece of board with these kind of stenciled works of linear works of photocopiers and that sort of thing. Quite odd landscapes to create.
And do you obviously would know Ellis Hutch as as an artist in there too. I mean, I'm sure that, I don't know how it is in the industry. I mean, would you guys have a lot to talk about when you catch up? Or, I mean, it's very different in many ways, but there are parallels, you could say.
Yeah, I was kind of aware of that after I started talking to her, and you know, I really don't see there's that much of a conflict. I mean, she hasn't talked about it too much, but
no, but there could be things to gain, is really what I'm thinking.
Oh, sure. About. You know, we've often had talks about the technical aspects of cardboard and the mythological tri-wall, which is you know, mega thick cardboard that the NGA uses to kind of make crates out of, and you know, hideously expensive but really, really good for what I was doing because it it saves me on glue and time, and just because it's so thick. And but it, I have got a little bit of it in the work, and it actually adds a really nice color differential through the, like, it's actually quite dark, and you actually get almost like a ringed effect, like timber. Mm. So it adds adds that vein of through the work.
Yeah, now that's good to know and interesting, and we wouldn't have gotten to that aspect of the work of having you threading it through. But I was thinking, you know, who else could you talk to about this?
Well, that's right. I mean,
only someone, and you know, that's also in a similar area or doing, you know, in a similar genre, and that's how you get your, you know, added information. We all look, you know, strength in numbers. We all need added information to sort of achieve what we need to achieve.
And we can start up a cardboard collective or something.
You could. You guys certainly could. But this is really, you know, high end of just a simple cardboard collective club or whatever. I mean, this is extraordinary work. And, you know, it must have been painstakingly, like, as I was mentioning, a lot of attention to detail. So I can imagine it kind of took quite a lot, you know, from sketches on paper, mathematical, sort of needing to mathematically work things out, not just in the body but also in the internal aspect, which I really am so taken by it. And that, for instance, there's a few different little elements of the speaker inside. There's one that just looks like this huge golden bullet, you know, and it's just very intriguing. It's beautifully captivating. I think people just really have to get down and see it and experience it, etc. And you're constantly on your computer. You've got your program there and sort of finding other ways of manipulating the sound, etc.
Yeah, so basically this week is a good opportunity for me to actually test it, test out different ideas in programming and see how people interact with the sound and with the space. And, you know, I think interactive media is one of the few art forms where you actually need to do a vox pop of people coming through the space and actually test out people's reactions, because, you know, that interactive element is really, really important. And, you know, I think the objects are kind of a really important way to draw people into the space, and especially the tactility. You know, I get a bit tired of all this screen-based kind of new media work, and you know, we're human beings, we really like to touch stuff, we really like to feel the scale of objects and feel the presence of things, and you know, that's where I'd like to head. And you know, hopefully this is a good step in that direction. So yeah, so you know, definitely come along and have a look, because by the end of the week the program might be completely different, and we might have something a bit more slicker running.
No, it's interesting, because I'm just sort of having a quick look here at what you were writing for me. And basically, you know, you just addressed that particular issue about, you know, that it is interactive based on trying to create that interactive environment, but based on spatial and tactile objects, which is what you've done, because you just so want to touch the outside of one of the pods, one of the speakers, because... Yeah. Even though it's obviously been refined, it still has that element of sort of velvetiness about it that, you know, drew me into wanting to just gently touch it, and I wasn't disappointed. It was beautiful. But the language, you're saying, and sort of being tactile, creating different effects on the environment, et cetera, is that another thing that drew you to the recycled element of the materials that you use?
Well, I think when you decide to make something of a reasonable scale, and you, at the time, you're a poor artist, and you think, well, you know, I can either use styrofoam, and I'd had used, I was doing a bit of work for Thylacine, and they were making this giant dinosaur head, and it was made in a very similar way, laminating layers up, but out of really thick layers of styrofoam, maybe 100 mil thick, and the mess, the absolute mess that came out of this stuff was just horrendous, you know, and had it in my ears, in my eyeballs, in my phone, in my wallet for just weeks and months afterwards. And so I thought, well, I quite like the technique, but I don't like the materials. And, you know, then I thought of fiberglass, and, you know, that would probably kill me. But, you know, in the end you come back to something like cardboard, and it wasn't until I actually started the process that I realized how painstaking and time-consuming it was really going to be. But it's basically never-ending, you know, literally. You know, you can go out there. I'm quite lucky within the studio, within 2 minutes' drive of the studio, there's a recycling bay, and I can just jump in there and just get every week there's new cardboard. I can never use enough of it. So.
So it's really, you know, your perspective, the way you see cardboard has definitely changed, I'd imagine. You see the finer details of...
Well, you see it everywhere now, you know.
Yeah, you do, you would.
And it's kind of until when you climb into a giant cardboard box, you know, it takes you back, you know, when you're a little kid and you're running around with cardboard boxes and making cubbies out of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's just great scope for it.
Yeah, well, it does. I must admit that your installations do have that sort of quality to it of this kind of womb-like safe environment to be in, or warm environment that you'd want to climb into. And be in, and especially with those added pieces inside that, you know, for me, it's like, oh, good, let's investigate the technical side of stuff here.
Well, I think if you actually take the speakers out of them, they're actually quite nice as minimal objects too. You can sit inside them and they've got quite good sound absorbing quality, so they're really quiet spaces to sit in as well and meditate on.
It's also got that tiered effect inside, which is more... prominent, but that so attracts me and it so appeals to me. And it's like, have you ever travelled to Bali and seen sort of the rice paddies, the way the rice paddies are constructed? They're all along the hillsides as if you're driving up into the mountains, and it's just this extraordinary vision of these tiered mountainsides.
Yeah.
Green as, but beautiful.
Because before we carved the exterior out, it was very much looking like an Angkor Wat type structure, and, you know, those Mayan type stepped pyramids. So, yeah, there's definitely that kind of relationship, and especially the brickwork kind of brings out that stonework element to it as well.
I've
been really lucky, I think, just also, the way the cardboard is finished up, you know, it's come out like terry toweling, you know.
Yeah, I was kind of saying like terracotta, actually, you know, those terracotta pots, but it is very, there's a sense of, to me, before you mentioned the aeroplane engines, you know, the side sort of cylinders of an aeroplane engine, etc., it really reminded me of, you know, very international type vases or vases, vessels, sort of thing, whether it be Asian or Middle Eastern or something. There's something more worldly about it, yet something very contemporary. It's very,
yeah, it's
you
very
don't get lost.
Ubiquitous form. Like, even someone said to me, oh, it's actually the shape that's on the end of curtain rods. You know that?
The thing
it's kind of everywhere.
I guess, isn't
getting
that
a
funny?
Bit worried about it now.
No, it's the need to identify with a familiar object, I suppose, you know, a known object. Maybe that's just the human element in us that comes up. But these are very contemporary pieces.
Great, thank you.
Will they see another day? Will they get to live another life interstate or something?
Yeah, I'm hoping to take them, you know, interstate, and might just be a matter of applying for some grant money and getting it touring. And I've got my cousin who's doing graphic design, and she's hopefully going to design a catalogue for me. So maybe get that printed up next year. So that, you know, I mean, it's basically all just stepping stones from here on in. You know, this is my first solo show, and from here you basically build your profile, and this is, you know, this interview is all part of that. So it's, you know, great for the opportunity, and basically just keep my head down and keep making. I think that's the really important part.
Definitely.
You know, but try and make quality rather than quantity. I think that's, you know, maybe have two good shows a year. I'd like to get them, out to Melbourne and Sydney and maybe a few regional galleries. But I think it'd very much depend on the space they were going in as well. You know, they really work well in particular spaces, I think. When I was designing them, you know, Manuka was kind of perfect for the idea as well. But, you know, they kind of direct sound pretty evenly between the space. So,
well, look, as you said, you know, you've got to be selective. You know, you've got to, and even I love the concept of, you know, the fact that you're aware that quality, not quantity, often is what captures a person's attention. You know, because you need to spend that time, that extra time, to figure out, you know, the inner workings of and how you're going, the machinations, how you're going to put it all together, et cetera, et cetera. How's it going to fit into this space?
Yeah.
And then work out sort of the logistics with that to make it adapt to that environment so that you can get the best out of it. I mean, and that all takes time. And don't put your head down too low, because you still need a few inspirations, a few people going, look over here, there's this, and oh, what about this interesting concept? And that comes from talking and seeing things and people saying one little piece of information amongst all the rest of the crap, and then you can run with that sort of thing, something that speaks to you. But this has just been extraordinary, and it's one of the real highlights for me of exhibitions this year.
Great,
without
thank
question.
You.
And I really encourage people to get down to Manuka. It's opening again on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Do you sometimes stay a little bit later than 5 o'clock in case there are people who want to race over from work or?
Well, yeah, I mean, if people let me know, they can give me a call.
Okay. What's the number over there?
Have you got my number there or?
Or the gallery number. I've got it somewhere. Because they can call you. There's a phone line hooked up over there. Well, they can call the main.
They can call Gorman House and they'll be able to.
Direct.
Through,
that's right, and that's 6247-0188. That's 6247-0188. Now, Gorman House Contemporary Art Space isn't open till officially till tomorrow, so are just going to have to seek it that way. So they should let you know. That'd be good, actually, if they could call you over there and let you know. But Jay, thank you so much for spending some time today. I've got to get you back to work. We've got Rose Osborne coming up next as well, and we've got to continue on. But this is, it's just really a striking exhibition with those deeper elements to discover and investigate. It really is capturing, it captures one's attention to come in and do exactly that, have a look and delve a bit deeper. And you're there with your
head. Me by my lonesome, that's it.
Buried in the computer.
That's right.
You know, and people should sort of make a big cough or a noise and so you don't get too... I do it too. Your startling startled me back, so there you go. And people come into the studio, I've got my headphones on, and I'm like...
it's an easy thing to do. You get
lost in sound. Lost in sound, absolutely. Jay, thank you so much. It opens again, reopens, the gallery reopens on Wednesday at 11 o'clock. If you give Jay a call, and you can find out from the Canberra Contemporary Art Space. The Manuka one's in the book as well, so
people should just
get off their butts and let the thing do.
And it is open over the weekend as well.
That's true. That's true. Till 5 o'clock, which is very good, because most things close at 4, especially on Sunday, but you're open till 5.
Yeah.
So people should come and say hello and have a look before it moves on. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Sylvie.